from here is a very important verse from the Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 60, Krishna tells to Arjuna something very nice. He says that the senses, and senses you all know, our five senses and the mind, they are so strong and so impetuous that they can forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination and who is trying very hard to control them. So this is our starting point. Even great persons who are born of noble birth, who have good character, can still find it difficult to control their mind and control their senses. And you know, and I know what happens when we cannot control our senses and mind. Very often we get agitated, we get frustrated, we get angry, and very often we also get very disillusioned about life. Many of us don't start being like that. But as we grow older, you will find that our senses give us more and more of a challenge. So Bhagavad Gita is such a practical science. Bhagavad Gita is such a practical science that it helps us to understand how not to just manage things around us, but actually to manage ourselves. So just keep this verse in mind. Our senses are very strong. They are impetuous, which means they are also rebellious by nature. And even a great person who can discriminate and who can say that I'm very cool by nature, very calm by disposition, he can also have trouble trying to control them. Now, I want to relate to you a very powerful historical incident of a great king and how he tried very hard to control his senses and how he failed and how finally he succeeded. It may be useful for all of us. Now, this king's name is King Yayati. Who has heard of this king's name? Anyone? Okay, a few of you have heard of him. If you Google the king's name, you'll find that he's a very famous personality in the Mahabharata. And he's also a famous personality in the historical records of all the kings who have ruled India. This great king was not just a very simple, ordinary personality. He was born of great parentage to a very great personality known as King Nahusha. We understand that after King Yayati, a few generations down the road, King Yayati's descendants included the great Pandavas, Arjuna, Yudhishthir, all the great kings, all the great heroes of the Mahabharata war. King Yayati had four or five sons. Yes, he had five sons. And one of his great sons was actually King Yadu. And King Yadu would actually become the head of the famous dynasty known as the Yadu dynasty or Yadava dynasty. And if you know anything about our Hindu culture, for example, you will know that none other a great personality as the Supreme Lord Krishna himself took birth in this great dynasty. And in fact, one of his other sons is known as Puru. And in fact, from King Puru, you would find his son, King Dushyanta, his son, meaning Puru's grandson, would be the great King Bharat. And eventually, India would actually come to be known as Bharatvarsh. That is actually India's traditional name. And it has been named after this great king. So all these great personalities are coming from the seed of King Yayati. So he's a very great personality in our records. Why we are saying this is because King Yayati was not born of indecent parentage. He was not born of bad habits. He was born of nobility. And yet, despite coming from such a great lineage, he also had trouble controlling his senses. What to speak of you and I? So keep this in mind. Now we have two other characters who are very important to this story. I don't know whether they look like this actually. But they were actually two very good friends. Okay, so King Yayati is a central character in this episode that we learn. He's inextricably mixed up with two persons. They are two women. One of them is the daughter of the powerful sage known as Sukracharya. Sukracharya was a very powerful Brahmana sage who became the gurus to the not the devatas, but to the asuras, the demons. Now, Sukracharya had a daughter and her name was Devayani. Devayani was very, very beautiful and she was considered to be highly eligible for marriage. And she was the daughter of Sukracharya. So by birth, she came from the Brahmana caste. Devayani's good friend was the daughter of a great king known as Vrishaparva. Vrishaparva was a very powerful Kshatriya by birth. So his daughter was also a Kshatriya. Her name was Sarmishta. So Sarmishta and Devayani grew up together because the king, he was also under the guidance of Sukracharya. So that was how they all knew each other. So we understand from this episode that Sarmishta and Devayani were very close. You know, being girlfriends, they shared many things together. But one thing the scriptures tell us also is that Sarmishta had one nature which is very important. She was very innocent by nature, but she was also prone to be angry. One day, we hear that Devayani and her friend Sarmishta, they were actually sporting with all their other girlfriends. And they were in the palace and then they went into the river and they were taking a nice bath. They left all their clothes on the river bank and they were sporting and playing with each other in a very private area in the gardens when all of a sudden Lord Shiva and Parvati, they pass by. Now the girls, of course, being shy and being decent, they quickly, hurriedly came out, found garments, covered themselves up so that they would be decent before Lord Shiva. In the mix-up of trying to get ready to receive the Lord and not look incorrect and indecent, what happened was Sarmishta unknowingly put on the clothes of a good friend Devayani. That's all. Okay? It's like I go out and I get slippers and I wear somebody else's slippers. Happens a lot in temples and functions, isn't it? Hopefully your slippers get returned to you. Sarmishta unknowingly puts on Devayani's dress. And at that point of time, after Lord Shiva goes, Devayani looks around and realizes, my clothes are being worn by my friend. Now what's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that. Except that Devayani was very proud by nature. Even though Sarmishta was a friend, she found it insulting that Sarmishta, who is born of a Kshatriya caste, could actually wear clothes which were belonging to her and she was of Brahmana birth. So Devayani does not control her tongue. And what she does is that she rebukes and insults Sarmishta. And the words that she uses is very painful. She calls her good friend a servant maid. She says, you have nothing else to do than to put on the dress of a higher caste girl. You were looking for an opportunity to insult me by wearing my clothes. And then she says, you are just like a dog. You know, a dog that snatches clarified butter, ghee, for use in sacrifice. Oh, he's put a dog there. Eh? Okay, fine. So just like a dog that is snatching clarified butter, meant for use in sacrifice, you, my dear friend, have just taken my clothes away like that. I'm very insulted. Now, just imagine. In life, you may think that you will not do this. But have you been in situations where something very small between two friends have become something very big? Someone feels insulted when you never meant something. You say something, they take it differently. They never look at you, you become insulted. Like that, even though in the name of friendship, we all claim to be friends. We all claim to be reasonable and mature adults. You and I know very well that in this world, our relationships are very fragile. They can break at the slightest moment of insult. For example, if I'm good friends with you and I just forget to invite you for a gathering or something, and I was very genuine about it, you can become so insulted that our relationship can break. All the years of being good friends is immediately forgotten because I didn't pick up the phone and I forgot to call you. I forgot to invite you. Devayani was like that. She was so sensitive that she now calls her good friend Sarmishta a dog. Now Sarmishta is angry by nature. Now one person is angry, when the other person is also angry, anger and anger does not beget calm. It doesn't. There's a saying in our scriptures that the word anger is just one letter shy of danger, isn't it? If you put D in front of anger, it becomes danger. So you know by practical experience that no matter how mature we are, the moment we exhibit anger in any situation, the situation actually becomes very dangerous. And this is what happened. Devayani lost her head, so to speak. And Sarmishta counteracted by rebuking Devayani. And what does she tell Devayani? She says, if you think I'm a dog which is snatching ghee from sacrifice, my dear friend, you are nothing better than a beggar. Because you brahmanas don't work. You sit down and you live on us who are the kshatriyas. And we are maintaining you. So you are no better off than the crows. You can see the crow there. You're no better off than the crows, you know. These minor birds and crows, what do? They just hang around all the garbage dumps, isn't it? You never find crows sitting in a beautiful pond. If you go to the nearest garbage dump, which is nearby NUS, you find the only birds there are the crows. So Devayani has called Sarmishta a dog. Sarmishta has equaled the platform by calling Devayani a beggar and a crow. So now both of them are very angry with each other. But Sarmishta goes one step further. After rebuking Devayani, that's not enough. She literally pounces on Devayani. She tears up all her clothes and she throws her into a dark, unused well. Can you imagine? This girl is dangerous. She's violent. So she tears up the clothes of her best friend, throws her into the well because she's so angry, and then she goes home. And this is what happens to us when we are angry. We forget how to control our senses. How many times you and I have been in an angry mood with someone and said things that we will never say, done things which we will never do. And then later we realize, my God, this is not me. And when we try to explain to that person, this is never me, they never believe us. Because they are also consumed by anger. So anger is really no better than danger. Now Devayani is in a well. The well is dark. The well is very deep. She has no clothes on and she's in trouble. At that point of time, the great king Yayati is going on a hunting expedition and he becomes thirsty. He comes to that same well to drink water. Imagine you going to drink water in the well and looking and down and seeing, oh, there's a beautiful maiden in the well. So King Yayati thought, what has happened now? She is terrified. She has no clothes. She is cold. King Yayati is very chivalrous by nature. So what does he do? Like a true noble hero, he takes his upper garment and he gives it to Devayani. And then he puts out his hand and he lifts her out of the well. The moment he takes her out of the well, their hands have touched. And the moment their hands have touched, Devayani becomes enamored by the king. This is just like movies, huh? Isn't it? I can see all your faces, you know. You're all looking at me as if this is like a movie. Actually, Bhagavatam is the precursor to all soap operas. Huh? Whatever soap operas that you see in Hindi movies, ZTV, Sun TV, they all have had some background in these stories. So the king Yayati looks at Devayani. Devayani looks at the king. The king has touched her hand. Her hand has touched his hand. And Devayani immediately, in sweet words saturated with love, she then declares, my dear king, you are a very handsome man. By just touching my hand and accepting my hand, you have now accepted me as your married wife. And it was the standard in those days that if a man were to touch a lady's hand, he would only do so if they were married. Today, it is just the complete opposite. Everything is done before marriage and then we get married. But in those days, if the hand was touched, then immediately, as Devayani says, let me not be touched by others. Why? Because our relationship has been made by providence. So Devayani took it that I have been thrown into a well by this terrible friend of mine who is not a friend. But somehow by the arrangement of providence, a great king has come and I find that I am now very attractive. Devayani senses were attracted to the king. Now Yayati initially felt, this is not good. I'm a great king. I'm Kshatriya by birth. She's Brahmana. Technically speaking, we may have some problems, you know, because based on scriptures, we are supposed to seek the blessings of the elders, not touch each other's hands and get married. So Yayati was thinking, this may not be the proper thing to do. But then at that moment, you remember the verse that we saw before? Even a man of great discrimination can lose his senses. When Yayati saw the beauty of Devayani, and she saw how sweet, when he saw how sweet and how wonderful she was as a person, immediately his senses became attracted to the object of their desire. And he then decided that since now you have touched my hand, I've touched your hand, I also now accept your request and let us become man and wife. So it is that Yayati is ready to marry Devayani. But he sends her back home to her father because she's not in wedding sari. She's only wearing his upper garment and things need to be sorted out. Now if you were Devayani, just think. You would go home thinking, today is the best day of my life. My friend threw me in the well. But you know what? She may have actually done me a favor. In other words, you would forgive and you would forget what your best friend, so to speak, had done to you. Because the idea of being married to a great king would eclipse your calamity. Isn't that what most of us would believe? Devayani thinks differently. Anger is so consuming that what happens to her? Despite being placed in a blissful state of meeting the love of her life, Bhagavatam tells us Devayani did not forget, nor did she forgive Sarmishta. And sometimes human nature is like that. Even though we are all right, even though something has passed, we don't want to forget, and therefore we don't forgive. And those who don't forget and forgive, very often they are the most disturbed of the lot. Those who forget and forgive in life, you find they become more peaceful. They don't look out for revenge, but Devayani did not. She goes to her father Sukracharya and she lodges a formal complaint about her good friend. Sukracharya takes it up at the highest level because he wants to please his daughter, doesn't want her to feel sad. So he sends word that he wants to see the king, Rishabharwa. And he wants to now demand from the king that his daughter Sarmishta should be punished for throwing his daughter into the well. Before Sukracharya can come, the king already understands that his guru is going to come in a very bad mood and he's going to be very angry. So the king decides, let's defuse the situation. Sukracharya walks into the palace and the king immediately falls at the feet of his spiritual master and says, my dear Gurudev, I've heard what my hasty daughter has done. I admit she's bad. You just ask your daughter now what she wants and we will settle the matter once and for all. Sukracharya then turns to his daughter. He does not even bother to instruct his daughter how she should control her senses, how she should restrain her anger. Why? We will understand shortly. You can only teach someone something which you have. You can only give something to someone that you have. Sukracharya did not have control of his own senses, which we will see soon. So what happens is, how can he advise his daughter how to control her senses? This is very important for all of us because one day, you and I, most of us will grow up, we will get married, we will have children. And one day when you exhibit your anger in front of your children, they will watch you. And few years later when they are older, they will say, it's perfectly acceptable to be angry. Why? Because my father is angry all the time. And mother is equally angry. And mother has a go at father, father has a go at mother, so I'll have a go at both of them. And this is how anger breeds danger. So what happens? Devayani is very happy. She now has Sarmishta at her mercy. The father, the king, is also at her mercy. And the poor father, Sukracharya, is also at her mercy. So what does she do? She says now, I'm going to get married very soon. She's very haughty about this. I'm going to be queen of the great king Yayati. Now I demand that Sarmishtra, my best friend, must accompany me as a maid servant to that house. She must now look upon me as mistress of the entire kingdom, and she must become a simple palace maid servant. And in that way, she must serve me all her life. Sukracharya thought, my daughter really knows how to get a good bargain. King Vrishaparva is thinking, this is very bad. But what can I do? If I deny, this guru, spiritual master, may curse my entire kingdom. And I cannot afford to do that. Sarmishtha is humiliated. But don't forget, she's angry by nature too. And in her heart, when you cannot get rid of anger, when your senses are not controlled, and you have to undergo humiliation, what comes to the heart? Revenge. She says, I'll wait. Devayani, I will wait. My time is also coming. So now, King Yayati gets married to the beautiful Devayani. And in due course of time, she gives birth to a beautiful son. Now at that time of time, just before that, as Sarmishtha and all the maid servants are going with the queen Devayani. In those days, it was tradition that if a king married the queen, whoever who were her friends or her maid servants would also all go and camp in the palace of the king, and they would be maintained by the king. At that point of time, Sukracharya, he is a smart man. He realized that Devayani is going to get what she wants, but at the same time, Sarmishtha is also not in control of her senses. And he could also understand that this great king Yayati may be great, but he actually has no control of his own senses. Why? Because just by carrying out my daughter from the well, he decided to marry her. What a reason to get married. Sukracharya could understand from all this that Yayati had no control of his senses. And he could foresee that the two girls may be best of friends, now they are the worst of enemies, and Sarmishtha is very capable of taking revenge. So Sukracharya calls his son-in-law, come here, I have advice for you. Whatever you do, I'm warning you, never allow Sarmishtha to lie with you in bed. Don't ever allow that. The answer is obvious. If you ever do that, your wife is going to kill you. Devayani will definitely have your head on a silver platter. So King Yayati has been advised by Sukracharya, his father-in-law, not to play a fool with his daughter and not to ever lie with another woman, not to be distracted. Yayati of course says yes. When a man wants to enjoy the object of his senses, he is ready to give anything. He is ready to say yes to anything. Isn't it true? The first day you or anyone else fell in love with your wives or your girlfriends, whatever they asked, you were ready to do. That's how love starts in this material world, isn't it? All the things that you could never do for father, mother, you will do for wife. Until you both grow so tired of each other that in the mornings when you wake up, you'd rather go to work than see each other's faces. That also means that we cannot control our senses. Either we are at this end or we are at that end. So Sukracharya, you can see him here. He's not very happy. And you can see the holding of the hands, you know, that started all this business between Yayati and his dear wife. Now, Yayati gives Devayani a son. Sarmishtha is now envious of Devayani. Because indirectly, Bhagavatam tells us when she sees this wonderful king Yayati, she also begins to feel attraction towards him. He's such a noble man. He's so handsome. He's a king. I'm staying in the palace all the time. What is wrong with me? I am beautiful. I am of high parentage. Frankly speaking, I'm the same caste as the king. I'm Kshatriya, he's Kshatriya, she's Brahmana. In fact, my friend should be thrown out of this equation. I should be there. So what happens? Sarmishtha is waiting. She bides her time. And she knows King Yayati is very fickle in his senses. One day, after Yayati had given Devayani a son, Sarmishtha approached him in a secluded place and she goes on her knees. Okay, he's got the picture right. And what does he do? She declares her love to the king. She says, my dear king, I'm Sarmishtha. King Yayati says, I know, I have seen you. And then she says, "My dear king, I wish to explain to you that I actually have great love and I'm greatly attracted to you. And I request you that you please give me a child." In those days, they were very forward. We would never speak like this, you know. At least I think we don't. But Sarmishta was very direct. Immediately she said, "I want to lie with you. I want to have union with you. Because ultimately I want your child also." Sometimes in this world, when our best friends have something which is valuable, we also want that. Of course, we don't say it directly, because naturally we cannot say that in front of people. But if someone has something which is very nice, isn't it not true that our senses also start thinking, if he or she can have it, come, don't worry. If he or she can have it, then why not me? How many times you have been in a situation, maybe in NUS, maybe as you grow older, when you see someone doing very well, and you wish him well outside, but inside you feel, you know what, it should have been me. I'm just as capable. I'm in fact better. Sometimes we see, especially in NUS, you know, I remember when I was in law faculty, within the first year, every good-looking guy and every good-looking girl would have to hook up. And then all those who are outside of it would be thinking, what's wrong with me? I'm all right. I have great qualities. I should be actually with this girl, or I should be with this boy. This is how we live all our lives. If it's not a girl or a boy, it's a car. If it's not a car, it's a job. If it's not a job, it's better salary. It doesn't matter what the object is, but our senses, they want to claim it as our own. So Sarmishta thought, Devayani, you think you have it right? You think you've got me as a maidservant? Now, I am going to make your husband fall for me. Yayati remembers the words of Sukracharya very well. They were said very harshly and very strictly. Yayati is a great king. But now he is thinking, why suddenly Sarmishta should appear before me? Just like this wonderful Devayani appeared before me in a well. Now this beautiful girl is also appearing before me. I did not run after Sarmishta. Sarmishta is running after me. Is it not my duty as a king to take care of all my subjects? When we want something very badly, is it not true that we find all the favorable arguments in our heart and our minds to tell ourselves why we should take it? We want to convince ourselves, you know. Just like, you know, whenever we tell devotees, you should wake up in the morning to chant, you should wake up in the morning to pray, we find all the favorable arguments to tell ourselves why we cannot wake up in the morning. Because we studied very late in the night, because we worked very hard. This way, our mind and senses always are born lawyers, you know. They find all the arguments and they give you the arguments to tell you why you shouldn't be here, why you should not be wasting your time. So like that, Yayati was saying, it's not my fault. This girl is on her knees proposing to me. I was not running after her. But still, I must save her face, you know. If a girl proposes to a man, the man should accept it. And then he took the highest of the highest arguments by saying that this is also the act of the Supreme. It is also the hand of the good Lord that he desires that I must also have union with this beautiful girl. And in that way, Yayati, with his senses, readily agreed. And he said, "My dear, dear Sarmishta, you are so beautiful. I will definitely fulfill all your desires." I know, that's Devayani for you. In those days, they didn't have a rifle. But what happens is, such unions cannot go unnoticed. Eventually, Sarmishta became pregnant. Now, Devayani started hearing from the palace and other outside sources. You know how word will fly, isn't it? It flies very fast in the air. Word was that actually the child of Sarmishta, the father of that child, is none other than her husband, who took her up from the well and who pledged to be loyal to her in marriage. Devayani became frenzied with anger. And she's so angry that she didn't pick up a rifle, but she departed for her father's house. This is worse than shooting Yayati. You know why? Because Yayati only wanted to enjoy his time with the object of his desire. When she left, the object of his desire had left. And Yayati became frustrated. Because while he enjoyed himself with Sarmishta, he also enjoyed himself with Devayani. In this world, we are never satisfied with one object of desire. Isn't it true? If we were all satisfied with just what came our way, we'll all be sadhus. Even though we are wearing jeans and t-shirts, inwardly we'll all become sadhus. The truth is, the reason why we are all frustrated in this world is because 90% of the time, whatever we get, we are never satisfied with. And after a while, we look for something else. Something else, something else. It's like that. That is our nature, unfortunately. So what happens? Yayati, come. Yayati becomes very upset when his wife leaves. Here you have a king who is so much a servant, and not a king, but a servant of his senses. He decides now that I am so sad that Devayani has left, and he's so lusty after her, that what does he do? He drops everything when he hears Devayani has left the house, gone back to Sukracharya's house. He runs like a beggar for his wife. He runs back to Sukracharya. There he uses sweet words on his wife. My dear, actually the truth is, I love you more than I love her. It was just physical attraction. I was blind. I made a mistake. She approached me in the night. I could not deny her. I was just doing my kingly duties as a king. But in my heart, I don't like her at all. This is how we desperately try when we know we have lost an object of our desire. And he said, do you know, I promise you in my heart that in my heart there's only place for one and it's only you. All these things he said. But Devayani had enough. She decided that he would not be the person she would go back to. And so she stayed with her father. Sukracharya was very angry. But Yayati kept massaging the feet of his wife. He kept asking her, please, please, let me satisfy your desires. Please satisfy my desires. Like a shameless man, he became completely despicable. And at that point of time, what do you think Sukracharya felt? Sukracharya becomes extremely angry. Now you know why he cannot check his daughter's anger, isn't it? Because father is also extremely angry. Sukracharya calls the great king Yayati an untruthful fool, lusting after women. And he gets so angry that he now curses the great king Yayati. Now people curse people all the time in this world. Even when you don't curse them directly, inside in our hearts, you know, we are ready with the curses. When we don't get something, curse you. When someone does better, curse him. Outside, no. You're doing so well, I'm so happy for you. Inside, oh, he's such a rascal. He's doing so well, and I've not got anything he has got. That is a curse. But Sukracharya was very straightforward. He said, since you are always wanting to enjoy your senses, now this is what I'm going to do. I curse that you will be disfigured and attacked by old age. You're a young man, but I curse you to become an old man now. You'll become invalid. You'll become impotent. You will not be able to enjoy any of the physical pleasures that you desire so much and that you now cannot do. For Yayati, that was the biggest curse that can happen. Now, if you and I were cursed by Sukracharya at this point of time, ordinarily, most of us would repent and say, you know what? This is Krishna cursing me and punishing me for my ways. I should stop my lust for sense objects. In other words, we would repent. But Yayati is unrepentant. He's amazing, actually. What does he do? Instead of repenting his ways, Yayati is so stricken by lust for this object of his desire that he turns the whole argument round and tells his father-in-law, my dear Sukracharya, how can you curse me to become invalid? If I become invalid, who will satisfy your daughter? Just think of that argument. Very good argument, isn't it? You have now condemned your daughter to a life of no enjoyment. Because as her husband now, I will be an old man. I will not be able to satisfy her. But what he was actually saying is, I want to satisfy myself, and you have taken away my age, and I have not finished satisfying myself with your daughter. We just got married. Honeymoon period is not even over. And you have taken the old, you have taken my youth and my strength away from me. Okay, I made a mistake with the girl, but now I am sworn to take care of your daughter. Please give me back my youth. Please give me back my youth. Sukracharya thinks, actually he's right. I sent my daughter out. Now she has come back. Now she will be on my head. Because now she cannot enjoy with her husband. What do I do? So he thinks carefully. And then he says, all right, the curse will stand, but I will qualify it. How? You will be able to get rid of your old age, provided, this is a proviso, provided that you are able to find someone you can exchange your old age for. In other words, the person must be youthful, and you can take his youth, and you give him your old age. Imagine if we could do that in today's world. How nice. Every time I look at my hair going, all I have to do is find somebody with a lot of hair. And I will feel very youthful. Every time all the teeth in our, you know, in our mouth is going, we just find someone who has a good set of teeth. Every time we find our knees creaking and arthritis coming in, we just find someone who is young and healthy. This is the way the mind wants to enjoy. And Yayati decided, very easy. Now all I have to do, he becomes very happy by the way. Now he says, I will just go and look to my sons. After all, I have 5 sons, isn't it? One of the sons will definitely exchange his youth with my old age. After all, I gave birth to them. Any good son should obey his father. Yayati, shameless, having lost his sense of right and wrong. And therefore, when you lose your sense of right and wrong, you lose your discrimination. When you lose your discrimination, you actually lose your intelligence. You actually lose your intelligence. And at that point of time, Yayati, an old man, goes back to his sons, calls them all. Yadu, Turvasu, Druyu, Anu, come here. Now, Sukracharya has given me a chance to live young again. I want to enjoy with my wife. You are young? Exchange now and be a good son. Yadu, the eldest, he denies his father. He says, my dear father, I don't want your old age. Of course, Yayati is very sad, but Yadu gives a good reason. He says, in society, we are all young. When we are young, we are in the brahmachari stage. Celibate life, student life. When we grow older, we normally tend to get married, have children, and we understand how the ups and downs of household life is. When we are older, after going through marriage, after going through raising children, then we come with the experience that it is time to retire. Father, if I give you my youth now, and I become old, I may have desires to enjoy my youth later. And if I do that, I will lose sight of my goal in life, which is to connect myself with God. And instead, I will always be thinking, what if I was young? What if I was young and what enjoyment I should have gone through? So he was very practical. He said, for that reason, my dear father, I am not going to give you my youth. So Yayati turns to the other 3 boys and says, you give it to us. You give it to me. All the 3 boys deny the father. But their reasons are not good. Their reasons are foolish. They have only one reason. They all say, my dear father, this youth that we have is so wonderful and it is eternal. It will last for a long, long time. We are just starting to enjoy it. Why should we give it to you? Mistakenly, they believed that they will live forever and they will enjoy forever. If you think that idea is quite preposterous, think again. Daily, that is how we live our lives. Yudhishthira Maharaj was asked, you know, in the Mahabharata, what is the most wonderful, amazing thing in this world? And each one of you may have thought about what is the most amazing thing in this world. But Yudhishthira Maharaj gives the best answer. He says, the most amazing thing in this world is that every day someone is dying. But those who live actually believe that they will live forever. Isn't it true? At the back of our minds, we all have this idea Let's not think about death. I still have many years to live. I have my PhD to complete. After that, I'll find a nice wife in a well. I will carry her out of the well, get married to her. She and I will live happily ever after. Some children will come and go. That will be my life. I will enjoy. But we don't realize your time is going. Once upon a time, all of you were in primary school. Now most of you are finishing your PhDs. And after a while, PhDs will finish, work will start. Before you know it, you'll get married. Before you know it, your children will be doing PhDs. And by that time, the only PhD you have will be permanent head damage. Not anything else. The damage that comes with living a life of enjoyment and frustration. So these three sons had no knowledge. They had no intelligence. Yayati is desperate. Who's going to help me? Now he finally turns to his youngest son, Puru. And Puru finally tells his dear father, "My dear father, I will accept. I will readily accept. I will accept your old age for two reasons." His first reason and second reason are very important because they show us what good behavior is all about. His first reason is, "My dear father, who in this world can repay the debt that he has to his father? By the mercy of father and also by the mercy of mother, we are in the human form of birth. And when you are in the human form of birth, you have a chance to reason, to have a conscience, and to understand the true purpose of your life. That is the difference between a man and an animal." So Puru is grateful. He is grateful to his father. And in gratitude, he's ready to give up his youth. He's ready to give up his youth. The second point is very nice. Puru here says that there are three kinds of sons. The best son is one who, even without the father asking, he understands the mind of the father and the heart of the father. The second son is one who immediately acts when the father gives an order. But the third class of son is one who refuses to even perform anything his father says. Or rather, no. The third class is one who just executes what his father says, but does it in a slipshod manner. But he says the last is the worst. He says a son who refuses to obey the orders of his father, he is no better off than the stool of his father. That is why in Sanskrit, the word putra and the word mutra is very close. Very close. Mutra is urine and putra is son. And Bhagavatam tells us they come from the same area of the father. The only difference between son and waste is whether we understand the true purpose of our birth. If we can understand why we are here, then we are really intelligent. Otherwise, Bhagavatam says, you are just as good as urine. There's no difference. Very powerful statement, huh? Very powerful statement. I think if there's anything you'll take back, you'll take back this putra and mutra. I can see it. It's all on your faces again. So now Yayati is very happy. Yayati actually doesn't care about what Puru and why Puru wants to exchange his old age. All your upadesh and tattva, you keep it to yourself. As long as we do the exchange, I'm very happy. So the exchange is done. And now Puru becomes an old man. But Yayati becomes young. Right? No grey hair. Stands up very straight. Previously he was very handsome, very noble. And now he takes his wife Devayani again by her hand. And for 1,000 years, Bhagavatam says, they enjoy unimpeded sense enjoyment. Bhagavatam tells us that in the days of olden history, people lived for a long, long time. Even assuming that you believe or don't believe that, 1,000 years of enjoyment is quite a load. Imagine, 1,000 years of just drinking Coca-Cola. 1,000 years of listening to the same pop song every day. 1,000 years of living with your wife. There's a progression. Just imagine. For those who are married, if you ask them, not in the presence of their wives or not in the presence of their husbands, how is married life? they will then begin to speak very honestly from their hearts. That's why in this life, people say our life is very short. But the truth is, we can only tolerate so much. 1,000 years of unimpeded enjoyment. Bhagavatam tells us, in secluded places, Devayani engaged her husband with mind, words, body, various paraphernalia. And she brought him the greatest possible bliss. But this is very important. We are now coming to the turning point of King Yayati's life. While Yayati was enjoying so much, something was also happening in his heart. Why? Yayati was not born of an ignoble birth. He was born of noble birth. His ancestors were also devotees of the Lord. And in those days, kings were always devotees of the Lord. Yayati, even though he was enjoying, never failed to perform his duties as a king. Just like you and I, even though we want to enjoy so much, we try our best never not to perform our duties. That is the least we can do for our parents who made us come here, for our parents who work hard to bring us an education. We have so many reasons for doing our duties. And King Yayati was like that too. He performed his duties. He did not neglect his duties. And one of his greatest duties as a king was to perform various sacrifices. We call them yajnas. And while he was performing yajnas, he satisfied brahmanas. And more importantly, he satisfied the Supreme Lord. And that is also like us. Very often we also want our sense enjoyment. At the same time, many of us also want some connection with a higher force. Because we realize that every time we get fed up with this path, the path of meditation, the path of chanting, the path of spirit gives us some respite. That is what Yayati was feeling. After 1,000 years, Yayati now began to feel frustrated. Why? Even though he was the king of the entire world, even though he was engaging his mind and his five senses in enjoying Devayani for 1,000 years, he realized the more he tried to enjoy, the more he could not be satisfied. Isn't that true of us too? Whatever you get, you never stop there. You always, in the name of improvement, ambition, we always go on to other things. There is no end to it. And finally, Yayati, even though externally he continued seeming to be fond of material enjoyment, internally he began to become frustrated. And internally he began to realize that there is more to life than just matter. There's more to life than just the pursuit of temporary sense enjoyment. And in that way, Yayati's heart and Yayati's consciousness begin to change. Because he became frustrated, he became disgusted. Disgusted with what? Disgusted with physical enjoyment and the bad effects it was coming with. When you drink too much, you have bad effects. When you sleep too much, you have bad effects. When you smoke too much, you have bad effects. Anything done in excess in this world is not enjoyable anymore. If you eat for a while, if you're very hungry and you eat, that's good. But if I start forcing you plate after plate after plate, what's going to happen to you? That source of enjoyment which was the food becomes the same source of incredible distress. If you're very thirsty and I give you one glass of water and you drink it and you say, I'm all right. Now I say, no, you must have 10 more glasses of water. Oh, from becoming all right, you'll become diseased. You can't take it. The nature of this world we forget, but Yayati was beginning to experience, is that too much of anything will lead to frustration. 1,000 years of something is bound to kill anybody. So Yayati now began to realize that all these material sense enjoyment is not going to help me. But his wife was still enjoying. She continued to enjoy with her husband. And now Yayati began to feel, how do I pull the brakes on my wife? How do I get her to understand that we have to renounce this way of life? We have to change our lifestyle. We have to understand that there is more to life than matter, but there is something greater and more satisfying. So one day he decides best way to explain to wife is to tell her a story. So he sits his wife down and says, Devayani, I want to tell you a story. It's a story of a goat. You can see the goat here. Now, once upon a time, in a kingdom far away, there lived a very powerful, very handsome, very noble male goat. And the goat was so powerful and noble that all the female goats were attracted to the male goat. One day, the male goat was passing by a well. And when he looked inside, the male goat found a she-goat. That's the she-goat. And it was struggling in the water. The male goat, being the hero that he was, picked up the she-goat and took it out. She-goat became very enamored by the male goat and said to the male goat, please take me as your wife. The male goat, being very powerful, very virile, very manly, decided, yes, I'm your hero and I will take care of you. So for many, many years, the male goat enjoyed with the she-goat. She-goat enjoyed with the male goat. Until one day, the she-goat caught the male goat with another she-goat. And the she-goat became so angry, she went back to her master, who happened to be a Brahmana. The Brahmana then pulled the he-goat away from his illicit affair with the other she-goat. And to punish the he-goat, the Brahmana then took away his manhood and castrated him. The male goat now had become nothing without his possibility of sense enjoyment. He begs and begs the Brahmana to restore his manhood so that he can enjoy again. When the Brahmana restores his manhood, the she-goat and the man and the he-goat enjoy. But after many years of enjoyment, they find that they are still not satisfied. And that was the end of the story. Now, it doesn't take a man of great intelligence to understand what the husband was telling the wife. Sometimes I feel King Yayati should have been more innovative in trying to explain his situation. You know, I think you will agree with me, but this is Bhagavatam, so. After narrating the story of the he-goat, Yayati then looks at his wife. He becomes very humble. This is very important, no? Here's a king who has been enjoying for years. Here's a king who wanted to enjoy his youth. But now he becomes very humble. And he says, my dear wife, in case you didn't know what the story was about, I feel that I am like the male goat in the story. Why? Because I became so poor in my intelligence that I became captivated by your beauty, which was temporary. I became captivated by this great illusion. And I thought that this was my main business in life, to just enjoy, and therefore I will be eternally happy. But I realized finally, and this is a beautiful verse from Bhagavatam, I realized finally that a person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind, even if he has enough of everything in this world. And in those days, in Bhagavatam's time, the important things were rice, barley, food grains, gold, animals, and women. Today we may substitute rice, barley, food grains. Gold is still very important to us. If you go down Serangoon Road and you see all the jewelry shop, gold is still very important. Animals, not very important to us now. We count our wealth not in terms of cows, but in terms of our bank balances. And women. Women does not only mean man's attraction to women, but women's attraction to man. Whichever way, Bhagavatam tells us that if we think that any material relationship in this world is going to completely satisfy us, then we are going to become very frustrated. It will never satisfy us. Yayati then goes on. Now he tells his wife, my dear wife, if you supply butter to fire, what happens to the fire? Doesn't get extinguished. Instead, the fire increases more. In the same way, my dear wife, if you and I continually try to enjoy, we will never be successful until we voluntarily control and discipline our mind and our senses. The next advice he gave is very nice. And you may wonder, How is this connected to what we are discussing? He says, when a man has no envy in his heart, when he doesn't desire ill fortune for anyone, then he really becomes peaceful. And that's what we are really after. If you ask anyone in NUS, what are you really after? They will give you a variety of answers. But the end result of all that answers is everyone wants peace, everyone wants bliss. That's the key. We just want it in different forms. But Bhagavatam tells us, when you are lusting after something, when you want something so badly and that thing is not permanent, you will become frustrated. Because you cannot have it always. It doesn't stay with you always. It will leave you. When that happens, you will become envious of the other person who has something you don't have. You see the connection between envy and the connection between lust. Where there is lust, there will always be envy. Where there is jealousy, there will always be lust. And for such a person who doesn't have that in his heart, then wherever he is peaceful. Wherever she is peaceful. Otherwise, when you're in Singapore, you say Singapore is bad. You go to India, you say India is not good, Singapore is better. When you are here, you say India is better. When in India, you say Singapore is better. When you are in NUS, you say working world is better. When you go out in the working world, you say, I wish I was still studying. This is how we've always lived our life, isn't it? When you have your first wife, you say, I wish another wife is there. When you get your second wife, you say, why did I leave my first wife? This is how we all live our lives. And this is the reason why we are in trouble. Then Yayati says, very nice point. If anyone is too much attached to material enjoyment, sense gratification is very difficult to give up. Even if you become old, even if you are sick, you cannot give up the desire to enjoy. Isn't it true? This is really human psychology. How many times have you fallen sick, lay on your bed, but wish you had gone out for a movie? Desire is there. It's very strong. If you ask old people, you know, how do you feel when you're old? The proper answer they will tell you, I have given up enjoyment. I have retired. But if they have a chance to enjoy, they will do it. It's just that the body is weak, so we have to deny ourselves and give the favorable arguments why we don't want to enjoy. Because we can't enjoy anymore. That's the difference. It's what we call sour grapes, isn't it? When the fox wanted to get the grapes, you know, the grapes was very nice. After trying so many times and he couldn't get the grapes, he said, you know what? The grapes look actually sour. So that's the reason why I don't want to take the grapes. This is how we always live. But we want to enjoy, but we can't. And because of that, we become more frustrated. We become more frustrated. Now Yayati gives us the solution to becoming free from this frustration. His entire life was one of chasing after something which would give him enjoyment, being slapped, begging for it again, being slapped again, enjoying all his life, thinking this will be the end of everything, and finally realizing after 1,000 years, you know what? I'm still not happy. I'm still not peaceful. And this is what he says. I've spent a full 1,000 years enjoying sense gratification, yet my desire to enjoy is increasing. Instead of decreasing, instead of becoming completely peaceful, I still want more and more and more. So now he says, my dear wife, I'm going to give up these desires. I'm going to meditate on the object of real desire, the object of real peace. And that is my connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How do I do that? The first thing he says is, stop this concoction. Do you know what the concoction means? Very simple example. I and Sandeep, Sriram Gopal Prabhu, we are very good friends. Every day we see each other in NUS and we say hello, hello. One day, Sriram Gopal Prabhu has a bad day and he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. So he comes to work or he comes to NUS in a very foul mood. He's very angry, depressed, he's distracted. I pass by him and I say, hello. And he looks through me. Doesn't even acknowledge who I am. You know? So what happens to me? Of course, I don't tear his clothes and throw him in a well. Right? I'm now a civilized human being. So what I do is, oh, so you want to behave difficult. Next time when I see him, I'll just be cool also. Now, Sri Ram Gopal Prabhu actually had nothing in his heart. Nothing in his mind. He was just distracted. So what happens then? The next day, he's all right. Now, I'm thinking, if I see him now, I'm very sensitive. Huh? And I'm very proud. So I think the next time I see him, I have to reciprocate. How? The next time he sees me and says, hello, I look away. I see here, I see there. I see everywhere except him. Now, Sri Ram Gopal Prabhu is confused. What happened? We were all right. What happened? Then he thinks, all right, if this is how he wants to be, why should I push him? I also have my dignity, isn't it? In the name of dignity, I will also be very cool with him. So now I'm regretting. I went back and I thought, this is not good. Very childish. Next time I see him, I will say hello. So the next time I come, I'm ready to say hello. He is ready to ignore me. So I say hello, he looks here and there. And finally, both of us decide, you know what, we are not going to see each other, not going to talk to each other, because, you know, he's very funny and he's very funny. And in that way, nothing happened. There was no fight. There was no reason for this breakdown. But because of concoction, our desires are unfulfilled. And where there is no desires which are fulfilled, we are frustrated. And this is how we hurt each other in this world. It happens to the best of us, isn't it? Yes. Now Yayati concludes. He says, my dear wife, if you really want to become free and peaceful, you do one thing. Please remember that whatever happiness you get in this world, which has no connection to spirit, it is temporary and therefore it is useless. If you're really intelligent, you should not try to enjoy these things. Because if you try to enjoy them, that very thing that gives you pleasure today will give you misery tomorrow. And that will be how you will live your life. Yayati now understood the purpose of life. But sometimes talking is nice. We have to act on what we speak. I've spoken so long. Hopefully, I will act on what I speak after I leave all of you. And you have all heard so long. And you're wondering, when is he going to stop? But after stopping and after we have prasadam, is anything in our lives going to change? If it's not going to change, then what you and I have done is purely a ritual. I've come to be heard. You have come to be seen. That's it. If we really want to change our life, if we really want to make a change to bring real happiness, then we should do what Yayati did. What did he do? He practically acted on his desire to renounce. What did he do? He exchanged his youth again with his son. He said, Puru, I want to grow old again. I have realized, whether you're old or young, if you're not connected with the Supreme, you will always be frustrated. So give me back my old age and you take your youth. He divided his kingdom amongst his sons. Enough of enjoyment, enough of ruling. Now, I and my wife, we want to dedicate our time to understand the higher purpose of life. So, Yayati and his wife, they leave all the modern aspects of life. And what do? They go back. They go back to a peaceful life. And where is this peaceful life? This peaceful life is not in a forest. Of course, in those days, they found the forest to be the most conducive place. I'm not telling you to leave NUS now and go back home and find a forest. No. If you do that, your parents are going to come after me. You can find that even as you are here. Because finding peace in life is a state of consciousness. It is a change in your lifestyle. That's the difference. That's what happened to Yayati. What can we learn from Yayati? He started his life as a great king. Halfway through, he could not control his senses. He had one woman, then he needed another woman. And then he threw away his second wife He went back to his first wife, and then he begged that he could enjoy her. And after 1,000 years of enjoyment, you would think you would become satisfied and peaceful and sadhu-like. But Yayati realized after 1,000 years, I'm still not peaceful. I'm still not feeling happy. So what can we learn from Yayati? The first thing we can learn from him is how easy it is to make our existence despicable. How easy our existence can become worthless. If you and I just led a life of coming to work, coming to study, going back home, finding some entertainment here and there, the life will pass. And by the end of your life, you will ask yourself this question: is this what life was all about? I just grew up, enjoyed for a while, and for every moment of happiness, I had an equal moment of sadness. And then I had some children, and I thought children would bring me happiness, after wife didn't bring me happiness. And after children come, I'm equally frustrated. And after they grow old, I think I can retire. But again, there's always some problem. Isn't there any end to this? So the question we must ask, and the question we must heed: if it can happen to a great personality like Yayati, it can happen to any one of us. Any one of us. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 62, Krishna says to Arjuna, the moment you contemplate on the object of your senses, things happen. You develop attachment for them. Now you just think about this to yourself, how practical this is as a science. The reason for unhappiness begins when you contemplate on the object of your senses. I give you a simple example. I need to go and watch a movie. So what happens is I start contemplating on the movie. Now, after a while of contemplation, I develop attachment for the movie. Haven't seen it yet, but I have some attachment for it. Now, from attachment, the attachment grows. When it's strong, it is called lust. Lust means if I don't see the movie, I'm not going to be happy. I have to see the movie. I have to get it. Now, when you don't get it, anger rises. The moment you become angry, then you become deluded. Supposing you like a girl, and you think I must have time with her and she must like me. Unfortunately, in this world, it's not often the case. So what happens is, you contemplate on her day and night. I'm in love with her. But she's not contemplating on you at all. You have developed attachment for her. Wherever she goes, you are going. You see her, you start behaving funny. You've seen all this in the movies, isn't it? But you're now becoming frustrated because she's not giving back what you are giving to her. Lust is there. Attachment is there. But because you are frustrated, you become frustrated. When you're frustrated, you are angry. Of course, you can't show her you're angry. There goes the deal. The moment you're angry, that's it. She's never going to come close to you. So anger builds up in the heart. Many times we behave one thing outside. I'm a calm person, I'm very cool. But anger is inside. We can't show it, because if we show it, they will say, ah, you're an angry man. It's very, very cool to be cool, isn't it? So we all want to show we are cool. But because we are not connected to Krishna, in our hearts we are not cool. And when we are angry in the heart, we are deluded. We don't know what we say. We don't know what we do. And then Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita says, we lose our memory. When you lose your memory, you lose your intelligence. How many times we have done things which we regret after we have done it? A million times over. That is because intelligence is lost. Attachment is there. It is unfulfilled. And again we come back to this material world. Again we try to enjoy. So the first thing we must take back with us from Yayati is how powerful and dangerous anger is. The moment you like something and you don't get it, you will become angry. It is the greatest impediment in the path of self-realization. In this episode, how many personalities became angry? How many times? You just think about it. First of all, the two girls got angry with each other. And then the father got angry with him, with the girls. Then Yayati was there, and he got angry with Yayati. And then Yayati tried to take care of Sarmishta, and Devayani became angry with him. And out of all this anger, did anything good come out of it? Nothing. Every personality who was either a victim of anger or who exhibited anger never became peaceful. Never became peaceful. Which brings us to the second point. Any relationship in this world which doesn't have the Supreme Lord in the center will inevitably become social, and therefore it will disturb. Krishna, Kunti, Queen Kunti says in Bhagavatam, Bhutanam yan mitaha kalihi. If two friends are there and their motive in friendship is anything but Krishna, anything but the Supreme God, then what happens? They will fight with each other. Because in anything in this world, every relationship is motivated. Very seldom you have a relationship which is selfless. Selfless. The husband will never tell the wife, hardly, you can do anything you want, I still love you. In the beginning he'll say that. But after that, when they are married, he will say, you have to behave this way, you have to behave that way, you have to do this, you have to do that. And she will say, I thought you loved me for who I am. He said, yeah, that was then. Now I love you for what you must become. And that spoils the whole texture and landscape of the relationship, isn't it? You enter with one thing, you come out with another. This is the material world. This is how it is. And this is what happened to Yayati, to Sarmishta, to Devayani. The other thing we should take back with us is actually there is a small Yayati in all of us. I don't know whether he's small or big, that's up to you. But there is a Yayati in everyone. Why? Because we are all essentially creatures of desires and habits. We are all creatures of desires and habits. We contemplate on something, our senses move with it. When we move with our senses, our intelligence is lost. Then we try to gain as much enjoyment from there, and eventually we find, I have to go somewhere else to enjoy now. And in that way, wherever we go, we don't realize we are not going there, but our mind and our senses are taking us there. We can drop something and still carry it with our mind, isn't it true? There's a very famous example of these two disciples of a guru. They were actually going back to their ashram when they came across a girl who was sitting down by the side of a river. She was crying like anything. So the first disciple asked this guru, this girl, why are you crying? And she says, I want to cross the river and go back to my house, but I can't do it because I don't know how to swim. Now, this boy says, it's all right. I accept you in my heart as my sister and I'll carry you. Now, these two are supposed to be brahmacharis. They are not supposed to have any contact with women. So what happens? The other boy, who is not going to carry this girl, he warns his brother, my dear brother, you have taken the vow of chastity. You should not have anything to do with a female. No, no, no. Don't do anything. And he says, I have to be practical, I have to help her. So at the end of all that, he carries her across and he puts her down. Now all the way back, he doesn't hear the end of it because his brother keeps telling him, you are wrong, you're wrong, you're carrying her, you're carrying her, you carried her, it was wrong. When they went back to the ashram, their guru asked them, my dear sons, how was your day today? And the second boy says, I have a complaint against my brother. He carried this girl across the river. And by carrying her, he has broken all the rules. And by carrying her, he has lost everything, all his nobility, everything. He has lost everything because he has carried her. For 10, 15 minutes, he went on with the complaint. At the end of it, he became silent. And both of them turned to the spiritual master and asked them, what is your verdict? And the spiritual master smiled. He looked at the first boy who had carried the girl and said, you carried her, but you carried her from the start of the river and you put her down at the end of the river. After that, you never carried her at all. He turned to the second boy. The moment he put her down, you carried her from the river right back to the ashram. And mind you, you're still carrying her because you have carried her all the way in your mind. And that is why the second boy was disturbed, but the first boy was not. Very important point for us to carry with us. You have to carry with us. The other important point is the point of the begging bowl. You know, beggars have a begging bowl, isn't it? In our Shastra, we have this very nice story. One day, one beggar came to Narada and said, my dear Narada, I want some food. Can you fill up my bowl? Narada said, I'm a beggar myself. I don't have anything to give you except bhakti. You chant. That is more than enough. He said, no, I need something to fill up the bowl. So he said, Narada said, okay, I have good contacts. Kubera is there. He's god of wealth. I'll write you a reference letter. You go and see him now. So Kubera gets a reference letter from the beggar. And he says, my god, Narada Muni has recommended you. How can I help you? So he says, I need something to fill up my bowl. You give me something. Kubera said, I have a full treasury, believe me. He asked his deputy, get something and fill up the bowl. Many hours have gone by, and Kubera hears the treasury being being emptied. He comes out and says, why is the treasury being emptied? And the assistant says, I'm still trying to fill up his bowl. Kubera said, man, the bowl was very small. Is there some trick to this? He goes and sees the bowl. He asks him for the bowl. And he, true enough, as much as goes into the bowl, as much the bowl requires more. Finally, Kubera has his suspicions. He takes the bowl from the beggar. He turns it around. And he realizes this is not a bowl. This is actually the human skull. It is the top of the human skull. Turned around, it had become a bowl. And Kubera smiled and said, this bowl can never be satisfied because it is a residence of the mind. And because the mind can never be satisfied, no matter how much I'm emptying my ministry of finance into this bowl, he's never going to be satisfied. And this is our nature. The result of that kind of bowl is that you will have happiness. It is temporary, but you will have long periods of frustration. And while there is no end to your desires, unfortunately, there is end to your capacity to enjoy. The day will come when you're old or you will die. Then your desires have no value. They have no value. That is why we come to the point of who is an intelligent person. You are all considered intelligent. Please, no doubt about it. You have reached the pinnacle of your degrees. In fact, when I see all of you, I am so happy because you have the sum total of how much intelligence I cannot even fathom. But now Bhagavatam has a definition for what it calls intelligence. It says that an intelligent person is one who does not take part in the sources of misery. Please take this back with you. An intelligent person is one who doesn't take part in the sources of misery. Where you know something is a source of misery, don't be involved in it. Because that means you are not intelligent. And then it is stated very nicely by Krishna to Arjuna, whatever pleasures which are like that, they have a beginning and an end. A wise man does not want it. He doesn't waste his time investing in it. So who is an intelligent person? Bhagavatam says nicely here, a person who is actually intelligent is that person who will run after that which is not temporary but which is permanent. Now your next question to me is there anything permanent in this world? And my first answer to you is, there is nothing permanent. Therefore, starting point is, there's no point wasting your energy running after anything in this world. That's the first conclusion you must derive. Whatever you do, do it as a matter of duty. That is more important. A mother loves a child not for what she can get from the child, but for what she can give to the child. If we have this mood of service, then in any duty that we take, we will do our best, but we will always remember that it is not the result of the duty that is important. That means we want to enjoy. But higher than that is the fact that whether we have a conscience, that we have done it to the best of our ability. That is the difference between character and integrity on one side and just insensible material enjoyment on the other side. That is the difference. So how did this great king, who enjoyed for 1,000 years, ultimately renounce? What made him renounce? He just did it with a little bit of devotional service. Not much, huh? Little bit. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna, even if you do a little bit of devotional service, that is enough to carry you over this material ocean. Because you will never lose this stock. All other stock you will lose. Anyone here with a PhD or approaching a PhD, was anyone here born with a certificate of your previous degrees from your previous birth? I would really like to know you. Was anyone born, right, with all the intelligence of your previous birth? You tell me, I can't remember. That proves my point. Was anyone born with clothings? Nobody. Was anybody born with a smile on his face? Ask your mothers. No. Your mother was not smiling when she gave birth to you either. When you come to this world, nobody's laughing. And by the time you leave this world, nobody laughs either. But in between, we think we will laugh forever. And that is foolishness. And that is what Yayati is teaching us. To do your duties, not to get temporary enjoyment. Yayati may have been a great enjoyer and a worthless person in personality, but he had one good quality. He never lost faith in Krishna. Never lost faith in the good Lord. He was never offensive. He was genuinely wanting to enjoy. But he was not an offender. Because he was not an offender, Bhagavatam tells us that genuine disgust and frustration came. Then he became humble. And then he admitted his mistakes. And then he repented. That is very encouraging for all of us. Before you go back, you must always remember this point. That the Supreme Lord is so kind that no matter 100 times you have forgotten him, his business is never to forget you. Like our fathers and mothers, you know, we forget them very often. When we were young, we couldn't think of anyone except our fathers and mothers. As children, how much we ran around our fathers and mothers. After a while, we ran around our friends. After a while, we ran around our wives and husbands. After a while, we ran after our own children. And after a while, nobody ran after us. But Krishna never sees that. That is why genuine repentance that Yayati had, it attracted the mercy of Krishna. So that when he started wanting to perform devotional service for Krishna, Krishna gave him proper intelligence to renounce and to achieve liberation. This is the point that we must remember. We want to end by remembering a very important purport that Prabhupada has given us in Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, which is devotional service, one may not be able to fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. That's our position. We are not asking all of you overnight, 24 hours, to chant the good Lord's names and leave everything. No, please don't leave your jobs. Please don't leave your studies. Instead, never be resentful of the principle of faith, the principle of devotional service. One who works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will be promoted to the stage of what Yayati attained, liberation at the end. This is the greatness of devotional service. No matter how attached we are to this world, no matter how bad can be our character, the good Lord Krishna is our Supreme Father, and he is always ready to welcome his sons and daughters. Always. There is always hope for anyone at any stage of life to turn around your life. Who benefits in the end? I am not going to benefit. If you turn your life around, you will benefit in the end. We want you to become peaceful, and we want to share that peace with you. And how do you do it? Whatever that you perform, whatever actions that you do, starting point is, do it from the heart. That is very important. And if it comes from the heart, then your character and your integrity will itself automatically attract the good Lord. And when that happens, you will then understand the true purpose of your life. Our first business is not to take care of the cage. Our first business is to take care of the bird that is in the cage. Imagine someone who keeps a bird in the cage. He takes care of the cage every day, washes the cage, paints the cage, takes photos of the cage, and the bird is dying because there's no food. What a silly man he is. And that's what we are doing. We take care of this body so well, isn't it? We give it nice spray, nice cosmetic. We take care of it very nicely. We see the mirror 100 times in a day. All this we do. Everything we do nicely. But the soul, which keeps this body so beautiful, we ignore. That is our foolishness. And that is the reason for our frustration. Yayati in the end finally decided, enough of the body. Now let us take care of the spirit. And the moment he took care of spirit, then his devotional service became unmotivated and uninterrupted. Because he could understand that my first business is to take care of my soul. And my soul will only become satisfied if I become a devotee of the good Lord. That's all I have to do. Which brings us again one round back to Yayati. As long as Krishna was not in the center in this story, Sarmishtra and Devayani fought. They envied each other. As long as Krishna was not in the center, Sukracharya was just cursing and cursing and cursing. Vrishaparva just lived in fear. Sukracharya's anger made him fearful. Yayati lost his honor, lost his character. But at the end of all that, did any of that matter to them? Sukracharya would die. Vrishaparva would also die. Devayani also would die. Yayati also died. What was all the big fuss about at the end of the day? Everything will pass. Everything will pass. If you can live with that daily in the morning, when you wake up, first thing you say, today also will pass. And in the night when you finish your day, say, this also must come to pass. You will really become peaceful. Really become peaceful. You know, there was this very nice story from Panchatantra. There was this man, his name was Ramu. And he was given a gift by a sage because he was a good man. The sage said, do not open the gift until you are faced with a terrible situation or until you become very happy. Neither happened to Ramu because he was peaceful. At the end of his life, he gave this gift to his king and told the king, you keep this gift. Open it when you are in the terrible of danger and open it when you are in the most highest point of your happiness. One day the king's kingdom was invaded and the king was struggling and the forces were dwindling and the king was going to be sacked. At that point of time, he remembered the gift. He opens it up thinking there's something magic there that will save his kingdom. Thinking that there's a weapon that will be so useful, he will be liberated from this terrible defeat. He opens it and there is a small note right in the center of the gift. And the note says, this too must come to pass. The king was bewildered for a while and then he became peaceful because he realized this terrible time of mine will also pass. That is the nature of life. And because he became peaceful, for some reason or another, he became prosperous. Because even though he lost his kingdom, he built his kingdom back. And when he became very happy on the day he reclaimed his kingdom, he remembered to open the gift again. And when he opened it, the same message was there. This great height of joy must also come to pass. This is how you and I should live our lives. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, which you're going to eat in a few minutes, whatever you have to offer, or whatever you want to give away, whatever great sacrifices you have made in your life, whatever great austerities you are going to perform, just do one thing, Krishna says. Do it as an offering to Krishna first. Thank the good Lord for what you have gotten and pray to the good Lord that whatever you get, you should never become too attached to it, such that you forget that what you have is always borrowed and it is never yours. If you live on that fact that you have gone to the library and your book is borrowed, you will return it. But if you think the book belongs to you, you will become a thief. Always remember that. That is how we don't reject anything that comes, but we genuinely renounce anything that is there. So the final point I can share with you is this very nice verse from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells Arjuna at the end, get up. He's telling him to get up. Fight. Don't go into the cave. Win your glory. Nothing wrong with doing well in your exams. Nothing wrong with excelling in what you do. In fact, he says, conquer your enemies, Arjuna, and enjoy the kingdom because you are entitled to it. But you just remember one thing. Whoever you have killed on the battlefield like a great warrior were actually killed by me first. I have arranged. I am in charge, not you. Whenever we get frustrated in life, 90% of the time is because we think that which is the object of our senses belongs to us, and that which we have is permanent, and we should take all credit for it. That's how we become frustrated. Krishna says, no, I am behind all that you have done. So you do one thing. You just become an instrument in my hands. Become a professional at your job. Become the knife which is sharp so that it can cut well. Become an instrument and fight. In the Western world of today, and even in the Eastern world of today, this concept of being an instrument is so alien. Whenever I give classes, for example, on Hindu culture in other schools, where there are French students and European students, when I finally tell them that this is the way to become peaceful, they all look at me like that. Because they say, you mean we have no credit to what we do? Yayati wanted credit for his wives. He wanted credit for all the enjoyment. But in the end, he was just frustrated. Bhagavatam is smarter. Bhagavatam tells us, it's not the credit that gives you enjoyment. Not the credit that gives you peace. It is the way to understand who you are, really. To take care of the bird in the cage, that is more important than taking care of the cage. If the bird is happy, whatever cage you give it, you will still be happy. If the bird is dead, you can get the best cage in the world, and you will still be unhappy. So please remember these points. I hope they will be useful to you. Because if they are useful to you, then we request all of you to take this process up very nicely. It is very practical. Yayati changed his life by doing only two things. By renouncing and chanting. If you renounce everything and sit down not doing anything, you'll become attached not to do something. That's also an attachment. But we don't want you to do that. What's the point of renouncing something and then becoming lazy? Rather, we want you to be hardworking, but give everything in the service of the Lord and become peaceful. Are there any questions? Any comments? Any violent objections, as I asked earlier point? If you have violent objections, I suggest you don't show me the violent part, just show me the objection part. That would be useful. Yes, Lakshmi.
Can I have a primary question?
Yes.
Was Puru Devayani's son?
Ah, okay. Yes, was Puru Devayani's son? I believe he was. It's in Bhagavatam. Two sons to Devayani and two sons to Puru. I mean, two sons from Sarmishta and two sons from Devayani. Which still leaves us the question of where the fifth son came from. But we'll have to ask Yayati that actually. But yes, I believe Puru was actually from Devayani. Right? He was from Devayani. And Puru founded the great dynasty of the Pauravas. And in history, King Porus, right? P-O-R-U-S, is a descendant from the Puru dynasty who actually checked the advance of Alexander the Great when he entered India. He was the emperor responsible for checking the advancement of the great Alexander. And he's actually having a little bit of Yayati's blood. So think about that. Huh? Is that okay? Yes, Suruchi.
Do you want to say that everything is arranged by Krishna. But whatever thing Yayati did was because of his own desire.
Very good point.
So how can you know which thing in your life has been arranged and which has been done by you?
Excellent question. How can you tell what point of your life is arranged and what point of your life is not arranged? Because this is a very convenient argument for all of us to use, isn't it? You know, just think about it. I go up to someone and slap them on the face. My dear sir, it's just the arrangement of the divine that I felt like slapping you, you know. Just imagine doing that and going to the court and telling the judge, my dear Lord, you have to read Bhagavatam to understand why I actually committed the crime. The answer, the best way I can answer you is to give you a very simple on-the-ground answer. There is a difference between sanction and blessing. But they both come from the Supreme Lord. Think of it as a big circle and many subsets in one circle. If a great demon wants to breathe air, he can only breathe air by the sanction of the Lord. But after breathing air, he commits bad activities. He cannot say that because the good Lord gave me air to breathe, I had the strength to commit bad activities. And therefore, by reason of logic, the person responsible for my situation or for my action is the good Lord. Okay? That's the first level. The easier thing I can give you is, how many of you have gone to Malaysia? You're wondering, why am I asking that? Huh? Okay.
He's born in Malaysia.
Now, if supposing you want to go to Malaysia tomorrow, you have your passport. I have my passport too. Now, I want to go to Malaysia because the reason why I'm going there is because I want to plant a few bombs and I want to cause some terrorist attacks in Malaysia. Okay? Please don't quote me on this. It becomes very dangerous. Very good. Now, Brajhari Prabhu is going back to Malaysia because he wants to see his mother and because he's newly married and he wants to bring Lakshmi, his wife, also. Okay? Very noble reason. Huh? He also wants to go there so that he can actually preach Bhagavad Gita and conduct some programs. Both me and Brajhari Prabhu happen to be good friends and we come to the checkpoint at the same time. My desire and my aim to cross over to Malaysia is very different from his. But we both have to pass through the causeway with our passports. We still both need the sanction of the customs authority. So they both stamp on our passports. Meaning, you are allowed to gain entry into Malaysia. Once we go in, we have been sanctioned to go in. Brajhari Prabhu does nice Bhagavad Gita preaching. And he's doing nice service. I go and plant the bombs and I'm caught. I appear before the judge and tell the judge, my dear Lord, actually, your state sanctioned my being in Malaysia. As much as it sanctioned my friend. So there's nothing wrong once I come into Malaysia that I can do anything on your soil. You and I both know what the judge is going to say. Sanctioning your entry does not mean sanctioning your action. There is a difference. So when we say that everything is arranged by Krishna, what we mean is, without Krishna's blessings, or rather, don't use the word blessing, I'll confuse you. Without Krishna's sanction, there will not be oxygen for us to breathe. Without Krishna's sanction, there will not be a planet for us to live in. But having lived in the planet and having been in the planet, how we behave will either attract his blessings or attract karma, which is going to be reactions that we will have to suffer. That we cannot say, after all, it is Krishna's blessings. He may sanction something, but it doesn't mean he's blessing it. There is a difference. This is the closest possible scenario, local, that I can give you to make you understand roughly the difference between arrangement and freedom of our movement and freedom to perform actions which we know in our heart is right or not right. Is that helpful? Yes.
At the time when we lose our discrimination, at the spur of moment, for example, in the case where the ARP lost, when Samishta requested him,
yes.
He lost, that he had arguments which are in favor of his message. At that particular spur of moment, what is the best way, how can we remember all this knowledge which you
just said? Yeah, very nice point. Because when we lose our head, you know, at the point when we are angry or frustrated, it's very difficult to sit back and say, I remember Bhagavatam, I remember Yayati, I remember all this. It's very difficult. How do we get to that stage? It's the same way you sit for an exam. Fast you sit for an exam, now you say, I'm not prepared. We have to become prepared for such a situation. In other words, you and I have to do our homework. Anything that you want to perfect, you must first practice. Isn't it true? There is nothing in this world that you can perfect without practicing. Like everything else, getting peace also requires practice. If it is just on a theoretical level, and we go back and we talk about philosophy, when it comes to action, chances are we will lose out. But if every one of you tested the theory that I've put forward today and tried to practice it, you'll find the lead difference of time between the time you get agitated and the time knowledge comes into your heart will first start very far. But gradually with practice, the time difference will decrease. So much so, finally, by the Lord's grace, when a terrible situation happens to you, because you have been practicing this process so nicely, so sincerely, Krishna will give you the intelligence to immediately react in the best favorable way, so as not to create further disturbance, but to become more peaceful. It is twofold. If you walk towards Krishna, Krishna walks faster to you. That's how kind he is. But we have to show Krishna that we are sincere about practicing. That's all. It's practice. The more we practice, the better we get. And the better we get, the less frustrated we become. And the more we practice, the more Krishna sees, this one is very good. He's practicing all the time. Naturally, a father is happy when a son is practicing and trying to please him. Father is always on the lookout for such a son. When we lack faith, we don't practice. So that's the answer to me. There's no shortcut. Like everything else in life, people always think in material world you have to work very hard. But when it comes to spirit life, they say, you know what, it's just supposed to drop on my lap. This is the thinking. How can the good Lord be so bad? You know, day and night I love him so much. I love him, he's in my heart. Well, he can ask the question, if you say you love me, what have you done? Show me the proof of your love. Imagine you are married. Brajhari Prabhu marries Lakshmi Mataji. Every day he tells her in the morning, I love you, my dear. One whole year goes by. Diwali comes, never buys a sari. Never goes jewelry shop to get more jewelry. Never brings her out. One day she's going to turn around and say, Brajhari Prabhu, with all due respect, you can keep the love to yourself. Because where is the proof of it? Right? That's nice. You know, I'm sure they will be very nice. They won't have these things. You know, it's a good example. Is that helpful, Prabhuji? Yes, Prabhu. One last question, I think.
Though you may see the stories of Ajamil, there's always a happy ending when the person goes back.
Yeah.
So, how do we actually we do not postpone it? Thinking that, you know, let me enjoy and then maybe at the end of life, actually, Krishna gives whatever little I have done. So he will put me in the wrong, in the right side.
Yes.
So how do we actually...
How do we get the sense of urgency here?
Yeah?
He's right. Because the moment all of us... Yes, Mataji.
In addition to...
Yes, yes.
Was, Yayati in there for 1,000 years and then he got genuine...
disgust.
And then he turned around.
Yeah.
So... Because in the peak of the youth, we haven't enjoyed at the peak, we haven't got that frustration, and still how we get that genuinity to turn.
That's a good point, Mataji. That's a lot of additions, okay? Yes, good, good. Adding to it.
Generally, we think, no, one time will come when Lord will give us a big shock.
Yeah.
And after that, I will be very full.
Yes.
Let us wait till He gives us a shock.
That's a good point.
So
what do we do?
Yeah.
Very good point. How do we inculcate this sense of urgency? Like you all know, PhD, you have 4 years, 3.5, 5 years. So nobody really plays a fool, right? You know, if you play a fool, you have only certain time limit. After that, you're finished. If only we knew how much time limit we had, it would be useful. But unfortunately or fortunately, Krishna doesn't provide us with that time limit. Actually, how do I put this? Yayati enjoyed for 1,000 years. You and I don't have 1,000 years. We don't have 1,000 years. But Prabhu is right. Even if we don't have 1,000 years, we still have one day. And we can enjoy a lot in a day. And we can say, you know what, this talk is very nice. Let him put on his dhoti, tilak and kurta and practice. I will practice in about 1-2 years after finishing my PhD. But where's the guarantee that you'll finish it? Where's the guarantee that you'll be even alive? The person who thinks in such a way, with so much urgency, his frustrations will diminish much faster than those who believe that they can live longer, enjoy more, and finally come to Krishna. The principle of material nature you must understand. Just like the nature of fire is to burn, the nature of water is to flow, the nature of this material world is to cause you suffering. You can't escape that. The longer you delay to understand who you are, be prepared for more sufferings. And the longer you have sufferings, the longer it'll take you to come back to the path. Some of us will only learn the hard way. I'm sorry to say. We'll only learn, as Mataji said, when the slaps come. So until the slaps come, you get all your small slaps. But Krishna is so kind, Bhagavatam says, that even your material desires, if you are chanting, if you are performing devotional service, even your material desires, Krishna is willing to satisfy. That's what happened to Yayati. Side by side, he was enjoying, but he was performing his duties. But because he never stopped his devotional service, despite his desire to enjoy, eventually the devotional service stopped his desires. That is the only way forward. You and I may not have the capacity, Prabhu, to have so much strength to stop material enjoyment. And you may say, come on man, what's wrong with watching a show once a month? It's not going to kill me. But if you continuously perform devotional service, the day will come when you will tell yourself, you know what, the show may be good, but I prefer chanting. And it will come naturally. So my humble advice to everyone based on Shastras is, even though the material desires are there, please don't ignore your devotional service. Continue the devotional service, and automatically, by Krishna's grace, you will lose taste for material desires. Of course, the more you try sincerely to stop the material desires, Krishna will become more happy for you. That's a grade one candidate. Grade two candidate is, let me just do material desires, Krishna, somehow you help me. Krishna will still help, but grade two level. Grade three level, who's Krishna? Let me just enjoy. Okay, enjoy. Like 100 times you have enjoyed, 100 wives you have had, 100 children you have had, and still you will live, you will grow old, and you will die.
Prabhu,
yes, Prabhu.
On a brighter side,
please. It's good to end on a brighter side.
We must appreciate Yayati, because for 1,000 years he was loyal to only one wife.
That's a good point. After he got slapped from Sukracharya.
Yeah, so he was truthful for 1,000 years.
Yes.
So maybe that was his reward.
In fact, Yayati had many good things going for him. Because at the end of all his nonsensical activities, he never stopped his duties. And he never stopped trying to perform them for the satisfaction of the Lord as a king. That purified him, gave him the right intelligence, so that eventually he did become frustrated. The process works. That's what Prabhu is trying to tell us. That's what we want to take back with us. The process works. How it works is dependent on you. This is the beauty of our movement. Individuality. All of you have the capacity, the intelligence to decide when you want to take this up and how you want to take this up. And if you ask me, right, in this world, this is a very forward-thinking movement. Because many places you are told you have to do this or you die. But here Krishna says, you may want to do it, but be prepared to suffer. If you want to suffer, be prepared to be adult about it. Don't blame other people. You have made your choice. Like we say, if you make your bed, only you should sleep on it. No one else should sleep on it. That is our culture. Okay, I'm going to stop here. We can go on and on till the cows go home. But we're not going to do that. Can I thank all of you for being such a wonderful audience? Most audiences who get tired of the speaker, they will show it on their faces. You have been so tolerant and so nice about this that you have not even showed it on your faces. So thank you so much for coming. Those who have come for the first time especially, my heart goes out to your patience. And I really hope that this will be helpful to you in some way. And remember one thing. We don't have to be in a temple to practice this. We don't have to be in any place to practice this. We just need a change of consciousness to practice this. Which means you can practice this anywhere. And that is the best thing you can take back with you. The body can go, but the spirit will always remain. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ji Ki
Jai.
Jai Shri Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki
Jai.
Ananta Kodi Vaishnavind Ki
Jai.
Itai Gaura Premarind. I wish you all the best. All the best. And I wish you all good peace and nice connection with the Lord. How do we end this, Prabhu? We chant 5 minutes the Lord's good name. Shall we try doing that?
Yes.
That's what Yayati finally did when he got tired of his wife. You know, one time my godbrother, he came to see my spiritual master in Dwarka. And he brought his wife with him. I think he was harassed by his wife, we suspect. But he couldn't say anything. So finally, in front of everyone, he introduces his wife. Maharaj, this is my knife. I'm sorry, I mean to say wife. And in that way, everybody could understand just what was going on through him. So we should also understand that we are always on the knife's edge. Chanting the Lord's name is the fastest way to decrease the lead time between frustration and happiness. Don't be stingy in chanting. Okay? That's why we are dimming the lights. So you won't feel shy. Sometimes we feel shy when we chant because we think someone else is looking at us. Believe me, nobody is looking at you. Everyone is looking at this beautiful picture of their lordships. And nobody needs to be a good singer because the only thing Krishna wants is how much heart you put in your singing, not how well you sing. And lastly, it happens to be that singing is free. You don't pay for it, no taxes, nothing to lose. So if you're not loud enough, the only thing I'm going to do is deny you prasadam. So can we chant very loudly after I chant? Yes or no?
Yes.
Very good. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
Rama, 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 Rama
श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ जी की
जय।
जय श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन यज्ञ की
जय।
अनंत कोटि वैष्णवृंद की
जय।
हिताय गौर प्रेम नंद
हरि
ओम।
We have come to the best part of the program, and that is prasadam. I see a cake here. That's also prasadam. What's the occasion? Oh, okay, fine. I know it's not my birthday, but I'm told it's Nimai Prabhu's birthday. All right. Now, for those of you who have come suddenly, you're wondering, do we also have birthday celebrations as part of our programs? Yes, we do. Why? Because we are a family. We should not go back and forget who we are. Our relationship is really eternal. By loving each other, serving each other, making this congregation an informal, friendly congregation centered around Radha Gopinath, we can do everything. We can have a good time. We can have our own transcendental parties. We can have our own transcendental songs and dances. And we can still be happy. So Nimai Prabhu, why are you sitting down there still? I think you're supposed to come out.
Already having found last Wednesday. And there have.
He's very shy. When we are shy, we say many things. You know? Okay. Am I the only one seated here, or is somebody else going to come? Where is his wife? Where is the good wife? Mataji, please. Okay. Everybody's hungry, so we have to chant. We don't say happy birthday. We have our own way of doing it. So those who are not familiar, you chant with us. You'll be quite happy. 1, 2, 3.
Hare Krishna to you. Hare Krishna to you. Hare Krishna to Divine Prabhu. Hare Krishna to you. May Krishna bless you. May Krishna bless you. May Krishna bless you. Hare Krishna to you. May you never take birth again. May you never take birth again. May you never take birth again. Hare Krishna to you.
We wish Nimai Prabhu all the best in his life, in doing well in his studies and everything else, but most important of all, in being peaceful in Krishna consciousness. There's no candle to blow, but there's a cake to cut. Maybe informally, if you want. I don't know.
I take photo later.
Okay. Should we wait for the wife to see how things go? I think we should invite the rest for the sadhana. They are getting ready. Hey, bro, what are you giving me? I'm supposed to give you. It's the other way around. I'll take the rest.
Okay, give me blessing.
I'd rather go for blessings, please. Please have your prasadam. And if you have questions or if you have answers, I would like to hear from everyone. Share it with us. And join us for other programs. This is just the tip of our iceberg.
Let us chant Jagannandan Prabhu by loudly chanting.
Hare Krishna!
Nothing more, just have prasadam.
Somebody has to start. Can we ask the ladies? Mataji, come. We'll serve them first. Ladies and child.
Just one small announcement. Next Thursday, we won't be having the NES program because in the Gauranga Center on 2nd August, we have Balram Jayanti celebration. And that is the first day of Jhulan Yatra also.
Last.
So we decorate the Julan and we have the Radha Krishna seated on that. So all of you, please welcome to that. Those who come for first time, kindly give me your email addresses. I'll add you to our regular group and I'll post all details about the program on that group. Thank you so much.
That's a good question. Any other?